All right, we are in Genesis 30, cruising right along. So, the three main parts, I think, here tonight. And let's begin, catch up at the end of Genesis 29, just to remind you. So this is right after Jacob is, in some sense, forced to marry Leah, the younger sister of Laban. Even though he was intending to marry Rachel, we saw that last time. And then if we pick up at the end of chapter 29, verse 31, "Now the Lord saw that Leah was unloved or hated, and he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. And Leah conceived and bore a son and named him Reuben, for she said, 'Because the Lord has seen my affliction, surely now my husband will love me.' Then she conceived again and bore a son and said, 'Because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me this son also.' So she named him Simeon. And she conceived again and bore a son and said, 'Now this time my husband will become attached to me, because I have borne him three sons.' Therefore he was named Levi. And she conceived again and bore a son and said, 'This time I will praise the Lord.' Therefore she named him Judah. Then she stopped bearing." So, four sons from Leah, the older sister, the first wife, as it were, of Jacob. And so four sons in 4 years, right? So these coming pretty rapid fire. And we see in verse 31 that the Lord had ordained that Leah, the unloved older sister, or the less loved, as it were, older sister of Rachel, bears these sons, and Rachel was barren. We see that as we pick up in Genesis chapter 30, verse 1. "Now when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, she became jealous of her sister, and she said to Jacob, 'Give me children, or else I die.' Then Jacob's anger burned against Rachel, and he said, 'Am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb?' And she said, 'Here is my maid Bilhah. Go into her, that she may bear on my knees, that through her I too may have children.' So she gave him her maid Bilhah as a wife, and Jacob went into her. And Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. Then Rachel said, 'God has vindicated me, and has indeed heard my voice, and has given me a son.' Therefore she named him Dan. And Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. So Rachel said, 'With mighty wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister, and I have indeed prevailed.' And she named him Naphtali, or Naphtali. When Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, she took her maid Zilpah and gave her to Jacob as a wife. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a son. Then Leah said, 'How fortunate!' So she named him Gad. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a son, a second son. Then Leah said, 'Happy am I, for women will call me happy.' So she named him Asher." So let's stop there for now. So what we're going to see very obviously here in Genesis 30 is this rivalry, just almost unbelievable rivalry between these two sisters, the older being Leah, the younger being Rachel, so much so that they bring in their two maids into the rivalry as well. So in verse 1, so what's the root of the rivalry? Well, the root of the rivalry, we obviously see, it happens in Genesis 29, right? This miscarriage of justice, as it were, that Laban foisted on Jacob and gives him Leah when he was expecting Rachel, right? But in verse 1, Rachel is angry, right? She sees that she has borne Jacob no children. She obviously sees that her older sister has now borne Jacob four children, right? So she's clearly behind. And so she became jealous. This is right there in the text. So we have envy here rearing its ugly head. It's manifested here in this statement, "Give me children," she demands of her husband, "or else I die." Right? So you've got envy, you've got greed. What we have at the end of the day is idolatry, right? And so we can see this maybe perhaps with our teenage children, right? Even last night, we leave the house, and one particular teenage person in my household leaves the house, gets in the car, realizes while we're a few blocks away from the house that she doesn't have her phone. And for a time, it was as if the world were going to end, right? I mean, there's this sense of, right, you just can't, right? And these things are, it's good for spiritual discussion after the fact, right? These things that we can't live without, right? We'd rather be dead than be without these things, right? These are strong indicators of idolatry, all right? And so clearly Rachel here is an idolater, right? And her God is... Well, in the primary sense, her God is her childbearing, which is very important to women, right? But obviously, it's not just the fact that she's without child, but it makes it even worse that her older sister, who stole her husband, we'll see that later in the chapter, right? Who stole her husband is actually bearing children, right? And so now we've got envy, we've got idolatry. Right? Greed, which is idolatry. So, I mean, just let's pause here after verse 1 and think about the things, maybe think about it when you go home, the things that you can't live without. Those are strong indicators of the things that will be in your way of worship, in my way of worship, right? And this is up to and including our spouses. Right? Our spouses can be idols. Children can be idols. Right? So we need to be very careful about these things. So, Rachel goes off the deep end here in verse 1. Give me children or else I die. Jacob, he responds in anger and says, am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of your womb? Right? This is... I mean, we understand Jacob's anger here, right? I mean, Jacob's obviously not in control of this situation. Jacob knows that he's not in control of this situation, right? And so he's frustrated with Rachel because she's blaming him, right? She says very clearly, you give me children. Right? Jacob has no control over this, so he's very frustrated. And so, verse 3, she gives her maid, Bilhah, to go into Jacob and have a child in her stead. We've seen this before, chapter 16, verse 2, right? We've seen it before. Sarai is barren, Abram's wife, and she gives him Hagar, right? And we know how that turned out. We spent weeks and weeks talking about how that turned out. And by the way, not just how that turned out, but the ramifications in our own world of that one decision. Right? We talked about that before. Right? It's still, that decision haunts us to this very day. In our 24/7 news cycle, that one decision of Hagar, right? Sarai giving Abraham Hagar, and Abraham agreeing to that, right, has massive consequences even in our day, right? And so here we have it again, right? Rachel is so envious of her older sister, right, and so distraught over her barrenness that she offers up her maid, Bilhah. So Jacob, verse 4, he's not innocent. He goes into her, right? He has an option, obviously, and he chooses unwisely, as it were, right? And so Bilhah the maid conceives, she bears a son, right? And Rachel says, look at this, God has vindicated me, right? I mean, how often do things go our way and we simply assume that God is, oh, God now is finally acting righteously, it's about time, right? It's not clear to me that God's involved here at all. And of course, God is sovereign, and I'm not denying that. Right, but Rachel clearly sees Bilhah's conception and the birth of her first son as God vindicating her in her idolatry. Verse 1. Okay. And that name of that first son is Dan, which is basically a play on the words judged. So God has judged me or vindicated me, that's the word. And so Dan is a play on that particular Hebrew word. And Rachel's maid Bilhah, verse 7, conceived again. So Jacob obviously goes into her again. And Rachel said, with mighty wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister. Okay, and you see that again, with my sister. Do you see who the battle is really against here? Right? This is a marathon, right? They're racing against each other at this point. Rachel's clearly racing, right? In competition with her sister. And Naphtali comes out, which is basically a play on the Hebrew word wrestle. Right? Now, verse 9, Leah jumps back into the fray. Apparently it's been some time, perhaps a year, since she has conceived. We'll see why later on in the chapter. But Leah saw that she had stopped bearing. She took her maid Zilpah and gave her to Jacob as a wife. Again, Jacob not completely innocent here, but Zilpah bears Jacob a son as well. So now we have four women involved. And when she conceives and births this son, Leah says, how fortunate, which is a play, Gad is a play on the Hebrew word for fortunate, or fortune. And then Jacob goes in again to Zilpah and conceives and bears Asher, which is a play on the Hebrew word for happy. All right. So now this is a love pentagon. That's what we have now, right? Not a love triangle, but clearly a love pentagon. Right, and so it's just ugly and nasty, and it's a terrible thing, and there's a great deal of consequence associated with this that will come. All right, verse 14. Now, in the days of wheat harvest, Reuben went and found mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, "Please give me some of your son's mandrakes." But she said to her, "Is it a small matter for you to take my husband? And would you take my son's mandrakes also?" So Rachel said, "Therefore he may lie with you tonight in return for your son's mandrakes." When Jacob came in from the field in the evening, then Leah went out to meet him and said, "You must come in to me, for I have surely hired you with my son's mandrakes." So he lay with her that night. And God gave heed to Leah, and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. Then Leah said, "God has given me my wages because I gave my maid to my husband." So she named him Issachar. And Leah conceived again and bore a sixth son to Jacob. Then Leah said, "God has endowed me with a good gift. Now my husband will dwell with me because I have borne him six sons." So she named him Zebulun. And afterwards she bore a daughter and named her Dinah. Then God remembered Rachel, and God gave heed to her and opened her womb. So she conceived and bore a son and said, "God has taken away my reproach." And she named him Joseph, saying, "May the Lord give me another son." All right, so now we have this bargaining going on, right? So the dysfunction is being magnified. We've got this bargaining going on. So Reuben, the firstborn of Leah, is out. So he's just maybe 5 or 6 years old at this time. And he's out, and he finds some mandrakes. So those of you Harry Potter fans, you know what mandrakes are. They're the plants you pull out of the dirt, and they start screaming, right? You have to have your earmuffs on, right? So these are, and actually, if you go on Google, and you type in mandrake, and you look in images, that's what they look like. They look like, right, they've got some stocky kind of hair, very short stem, and then they've got this sort of body for roots. Okay, so anyway, that's what a mandrake looks like. Now, it's not clear, right, necessarily, right, so some, they have flowers. Some commentators think this is a bit of a fruit, and are tying the fruit here to an aphrodisiac. Right, so Reuben, and again, this would be a cultural superstition, right? And we'll see this again later in the chapter, this sort of cultural superstition about mating and conception. We'll see that when we get to Jacob tending the flocks of Laban, right? But so this is why you wonder why Rachel wants the mandrakes so bad, right? Remember, she's barren, right? And now she's got this cultural superstition that perhaps this flower or this fruit that Reuben finds is actually going to help her to conceive. And so that's why this bartering is going on now, right? Now, it just so happens that Reuben is Leah's son, right? And so Leah now is in control of this aphrodisiac plant. And so this is where the bartering happens. Right? Rachel said, please give me some of your son's mandrakes, verse 14. But Leah says to her, is it a small matter for you to take my husband? Do you see that? Right? So clearly, Leah now has in her mind, right, that her husband, which whom she married, right, however by deception, but clearly she was the one who went into him on the wedding night, right, and Jacob did complete the week, her week, right, if you remember that from the last chapter, Leah is still not happy about the fact that Rachel now comes along as Jacob's seventh wife. Is it a small matter for you to take my husband, and would you take my son's mandrakes also? Right? And so now Rachel barters and says, therefore, he may lie with you tonight in return for your son's mandrakes. Right? This is prostitution, in a sense. Okay? So she's purchasing her husband's love, right, with this aphrodisiac-type flower or food. Right? Remember, Jacob prefers whom? Rachel. Okay, Jacob prefers Rachel. All right, so let's keep that in mind. All right. So when Jacob came in from the field in the evening, Leah went out to meet him, said, you must come into me, for I have surely hired you, do you see that, with my son's mandrakes. So he lay with her that night, and she bears a fifth son, who is Issachar, and Issachar is a play on the Hebrew word for wages. Leah conceives again, bears a sixth son. This is Zebulun. And look at verse 20. Leah said, God has endowed me with a good gift. Now my husband will dwell with me because I have borne him six sons. So I will name him Zebulun. Zebulun being a play on the Hebrew word of dwell. Right? And probably what this is hinting to us when we see the bartering for Jacob's time. Right? When we see Leah going out to meet Jacob and saying, I have bought you for this evening, right? And then in the name Zebulun, right, Leah is names her sixth son Zebulun as a play on the words will dwell with me. This probably means that Jacob was spending most of his time with whom? Rachel, his preferred wife. Right? So Leah is desperately here trying to get the attention of her husband. Right? And that makes sense because, again, if we go back to chapter 29, right, we saw that Jacob loved Rachel. Right? For 7 years, Jacob paid the dowry as Laban's servant for his daughter Rachel. Right?
The word endowment means dowry, actually.
Where's the word endowment, do you see?
Maybe it's just in the ESV.
Oh, yeah, 20. God has endowed me. Yes, God has endowed me with a good gift. Okay? All right, so that's what's going on here. And again, a continued source of tension, right, here between Rachel and Leah. Verse 21, the bearing of the daughter Dinah. And this is the only daughter that's mentioned. And the reason Dinah is mentioned is because there will be an entire chapter essentially devoted to Dinah in Genesis 34, which we will eventually get to. Pastor Wayne actually preached from Genesis 34. It was months ago now. But when we get to chapter 34, we will see that story again. Right? So a little bit of foreshadowing here about the daughter Dinah. And then in verse 22, God in His grace, He remembers Rachel and gave heed to her and opened her womb. So she conceived and bore a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. She named him Joseph, saying, may the Lord give me another son. Joseph is a play on the Hebrew word, add to me, or give me another, as it's translated here, add to me. So there's even a hint here in the naming of Joseph that Rachel is actually not completely satisfied with the son that she has been given by God, right? She births her first son and is asking for another one, okay? That's what Joseph means. It means add to me another son. Right? Again, this is consistent with what we've seen. Envy. Leah has borne Jacob 6 sons. Rachel is dissatisfied with only having conceived and birthed 1 son. Right? Verse 25. Now it came about when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said to Laban, "Send me away that I may go to my own place and to my own country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me depart. For you yourself know my service which I have rendered to you." But Laban said to him, "If now it pleases you, stay with me. I have divined that the Lord has blessed me on your account." And he continued, "Name me your wages, and I will give it." But he said to him, "You yourself know how I have served you and how your cattle have fared with me. For you had little before I came, and it has increased to a multitude. And the Lord has blessed you wherever I turned. But now, when shall I provide for my own household also?" So he said, "What shall I give you?" And Jacob said, "You shall not give me anything. If you will do this one thing for me, I will again pasture and keep your flock. Let me pass through your entire flock today, removing from there every speckled and spotted sheep, and every black one among the lambs, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and such shall be my wages. So my honesty will answer for me later, and when you come concerning my wages, every one that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and black among the lambs, if found with me, will be considered stolen." And Laban said, "Good, let it be according to your word." So he removed on that day the striped and spotted male goats, and all the speckled and spotted female goats, every one with white in it, and all the black ones among the sheep, and gave them into the care of his sons. And he put a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. Let's stop there for a second. So, back in chapter 28, when we talked about Jacob having the dream at Bethel, do you remember that? Right? Jacob was given the promise of Abraham. So if you go back to 28:13, this is during the dream where there's angels ascending and descending on this ladder. Verse 13, "Behold, the Lord stood above the ladder and said, 'I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give it to you and to your descendants. Your descendants shall also be like the dust of the earth, and you shall spread out to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And in you and in your descendants shall all the families of the earth be blessed. And behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land. For I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you." So God told Jacob that he would return eventually to the land of Canaan. So now, after all this time, he's now been with Laban 14 years. The first 7 he spent as the dowry to purchase, as it were, Rachel, although it ended up being Leah, right? And then in order to gain Rachel as his second wife, he agrees to stay another 7 years, right? And so then we have a few more years, right, after all of the conceptions and births of these children, right? This is actually after 14 years. He will spend a total of 20 years with Laban. But at the end of 14 years, all he has done is paid 2 dowries. Okay? The only thing that Jacob has in this world is found in verse 26. He says to Laban, "Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you." That's all he has, his wives and his children. He has not earned anything from his father-in-law Laban except for his 2 wives. And he now, he's tired, he's paid what he owes in the form of 2 dowries for his wives, and he's ready to go back to the land of Canaan, like God told him. Okay? Laban is not ready to give him up so easily. Okay? Verse 27, Laban said to him, "If now it pleases you, or if I can convince you, I have divined that the Lord has blessed me on your account. So this word in the Hebrew, it can mean, it has a range of meanings, okay? It probably does not mean some sort of divination. It means that in certain contexts later in the Pentateuch, in the writings of Moses, right? Here it most likely means that Laban has diligently observed. He has, taken notice of the fact, right, that the Lord has blessed him, that is Laban, on account of Jacob. All right? Jacob has the blessings of Abraham on his life, and Laban has been a benefactor of those blessings. So probably, you know, Laban's not stupid, he's crafty, right? And he realizes, yes, that his flocks have increased since Jacob has been tending them for the past 14 years. Right? And so now Laban enters into this bartering arrangement with Jacob to see if he can convince him to stay so that his flocks will grow even more. Okay? It says verse 28, "Name me your wages, and I will give it." But he, Jacob, said to him, Laban, "You yourself know how I have served you and how your cattle have fared with me. For you had little before I came, and it has increased to a multitude. And the Lord has blessed you wherever I turned. But now, when shall I provide for my own household also?" So he's ready to start his life with his two or four wives, depending on how you count, right? And at least nine boys and at least one daughter, right? He's ready to start off on his own life and make provision for his own household. Right? So Laban says, "What shall I give you?" Jacob responds, "You shall not give me anything. If you will do this one thing for me, I will again pasture and keep your flock." So now Jacob is going to enter into this bartering arrangement. It turns out it's going to be 6 years, right? Because he's with Laban a full 20 years. We'll find that out in the actual text of the next chapter. Yeah, next chapter. Okay? So 6 full years, Jacob is about to make an arrangement with Laban. All right, and here's the arrangement. Verse 32. "Let me," that is Jacob is speaking, "let me, Jacob, pass through your entire flock today, removing from there every speckled and spotted sheep, and every black one among the lambs, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and such shall be my wages. So my honesty will answer for me later when you come concerning my wages. Everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and black among the lambs, if found with me, will be considered stolen." So Jacob is saying, right, "I know your flocks. I know them better than you do. Let me go through and let me take the speckled ones, the spotted ones, the impure ones." Right? The spots and the speckles are evidence of the presence of a recessive gene. Okay? And so Jacob is basically saying, I'll take the worst of your flock. Right? And I won't take any of the pure flock. I won't take the ones that are all of solid color. And any ones of the solid color you find in my flock, you can consider them as stolen. All right. So let me, it's very important, verse 32, "Let me, Jacob, pass through your entire flock today, and let me do the separation." And the reason I keep emphasizing that "let me" is because what happens in the following verses is just plain wrong. Okay? So it's not that Laban hasn't, Laban's been wronging Jacob for 14 years. And here we pick up in verse 34. Laban agrees to the agreement. Right? He agrees to the wage. "Good, let it be according to your word." So he, Laban, removed on that day the striped and spotted male goats and all the speckled and spotted female goats, every one with white in it, and all the black ones among the sheep, and gave them into the care of his, Laban's, sons. He essentially leaves Jacob with no wage. This is why Jacob doesn't leave immediately. Jacob stays on. And this is why we have the latter portion of the chapter, what's happening. Okay? How does Jacob get rich off of Laban? Right? And it takes him 6 years to get rich off of Laban because Laban went through his own flock and took all of the animals that rightfully belonged to Jacob, according to the agreement they had made. So Jacob is now, he continues to be the shepherd of Laban's flocks, but the flock he's given now for the rest of the 6 years he's there begins with only single color animals. His wage was to be the ones that were speckled and spotted. Do you see that? Okay? So once again, Laban just totally wronging Jacob. Verse 36, just so that there would be no confusion, he, Laban, put a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob. And Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks, all of the single color animals. Okay? And as I was just sort of reading and studying, right, what struck me, right, was 1 Corinthians 6, 7, right? Paul's talking about being wronged. And he's upset with the church in Corinth, right? Because they're doing what? They're bringing lawsuits against one another. And Paul is lecturing them and telling them that that's a poor example to the world when brothers and sisters are taking one another to the secular courts to have their disagreements settled. And Paul's exhortation to them is, this is a terrible witness for the church that we can't even settle these things inside of our own churches. We have to go to the secular authorities. It's a terrible witness to the world. And it's better for you to even be wronged than do that. And this is difficult guidance, right? I mean, we've seen it over and over and over again. Laban wronging Jacob. And what does Jacob do? He just takes it. He deals with it. And at the end of the day, I believe it's because Jacob trusts God. Jacob's not perfect. He's no angel, as it were, right? At the end of the day, Jacob trusts God. We have no evidence that Jacob made any demands at this point. And by the way, who has been Laban's shepherd for the past 14 years? Jacob. If anyone knows what percentage of Laban's flocks are spotted and speckled, it's Jacob. He's clearly and obviously wronged. And yet he will spend another 6 years, and God will bless him and make him prosperous. And that's what we'll see here in the last portion. Verse 37. Then Jacob took fresh rods of poplar and almond and plane trees and peeled white stripes in them, exposing the white which was in the rods. And he set the rods which he had peeled in front of the flocks in the gutters, even in the watering troughs, where the flocks came to drink. And they mated when they came to drink. So the flocks mated by the rods, and the single color flocks brought forth striped, speckled, and spotted. And Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks face toward the striped and all the black in the flock of Laban. And he put his own herds apart and did not put them with Laban's flock. Moreover, it came about, whenever the stronger of the flock were mating, that Jacob would place the rods in the sight of the flock in the gutters, so that they might mate by the rods. But when the flock was feeble, he did not put them in. So the feebler were Laban's, and the stronger Jacob's. So the man, Jacob, became exceedingly prosperous, and had large flocks and female and male servants, and camels and donkeys. All right? So again, what we have here is not necessarily science, I don't think, but a little bit of superstition, right? Superstition and trust in God's sovereignty, all right? But superstition, I think, nonetheless, right? That he takes and he sort of whittles away at the bark of these tree branches, right? To make the tree branches look like what? Spots and speckles, essentially. Right? In the belief that if the flocks were mating in the sight of something that was spotted and speckled, then they would produce spotted and speckled offspring. And of course, we see, long story short, that's exactly what happens. All right. So he sets the rods, 38, where the flocks are watering. This is where they came to mate. Right. And so they're looking in the gutter. Right. They're mating there near. And these are, again, beginning with all single color flock. Right. And then as the flocks mate and bear spotted and speckled offspring, Jacob separates them away from the flock. Right? And he doesn't put his own herds, right? He puts his own herds apart and not mixes them in. So once over the course of these years, these 6 years, right, once he gets a few spotted and speckled members of his flock, what does he do with them? He allows them to mate. Right? And this recessive gene gets carried on. Right? And so as these spotted and speckled animals are being conceived and birthed, he's setting them apart. Right, and of course, he's also doing this with the stronger ones as well, as we see in verses 41 and 42. And so, over the course of these 6 years that he remains with Laban, right, and he's basically earning his wage, as it were, God chooses to bless him, right, to give him not just a numerous flock, but a strong flock, right, basically taking his wage from Laban's flocks, which Laban attempted to wrong him of in the first place. God blesses him. And so, verse 43, the man became exceedingly prosperous and had large flocks and female and male servants and camels and donkeys. And I note here, just like his grandfather Abraham. Abraham had all of these things as well, which we saw back in the earlier chapters. Genesis. So God blessing Jacob as he promised in the dream at Bethel with the same promises with which he blessed Abraham. Right? And where we pick up next time now is after this 20 years, after Jacob's flock has grown such that he is satisfied with his wages, after 20 years of service, Jacob is now going to head back to Canaan, and he will do so in a treacherous way, as we will see next time. Any comments, Pastor Mike?